Welcome back to another episode of the Tiga Tactics Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Evan Preparis, and I am joined by the co-founders of Tiga Tactics, Dr. Conrad Bowie. Conrad, say hi.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
And Patrick Vuong. Conrad, I mean, Patrick, say hi.
Hey, what's up, interwebs? Good to have you guys.
Messing up the podcast already. We're going to drive on, though. So, talked a lot about Tiga Tactics mindset, some of their methodology and stuff like that. But there is some pretty cool stuff coming up pretty quickly. So we wanted to get it out to you guys as soon as possible in case any of you want to adjust your plans and come and visit and actually train with us in person. So there is a Street Combatives seminar coming up in Maryland at the end of April. So why don't we jump over to one of you guys and just tell us about some of the details of the seminar, and then we'll get out talking about like what is the seminar actually going to entail and some other kind of follow-up questions I have for you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll just jump in with the technical stuff and Conrad can kind of explain the origins of it. But we're going to have it the end of April, the last weekend of April, which I believe is April 27th, 28th. It's going to be in the greater Baltimore area. If you guys are on the East Coast, Atlantic Seaboard, please join us. We love training in person. To me, that's my favorite type of training, is seeing people face to face. I know there's a lot of listeners out there, you know, in the Maryland, Northern Virginia, possibly the other states in that area, Pennsylvania, New York. If you've got the time, definitely join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. But in terms of the Street Combative Seminar, for those of you who don't know what that is, it is tackling a really serious problem in terms of violent attacks. A lot of people think of violence as, you know, terrorism, like, or mass shootings, or these really like Hollywood type of scenes. But really, if you look at the FBI statistics, the statistics from police, which we have done for the last 15, 20 years, most of the time, if you're going to be violently attacked, the most common weapon used is actually just the fist. It's going to be a fist fight. It's going to be an urban ambush using a sucker punch or a haymaker. And so understanding that problem, we've kind of developed an in-person program to kind of address what happens when someone punches you or attempts to ambush you on the street. So Conrad can kind of explain more and how that goes and where it came from.
Thank you, Evan, for the intro. Thank you again, Patrick. What you said, Patrick, they're going to use a weapon of opportunity. And most of us were born, you know, if you have all four limbs and you have arms and hands and a fist, you're going to use your fist as a weapon of opportunity. And so it is quite common to run into these types of attacks. And I'd like to share with our listeners how this program came about. This came from our frustration of training in traditional martial arts. Every art has their own response to this type of attack. And what happened was that created a lot of confusion. When there's too much data applied to a subject like this, it can cause a lot of confusion and problems when you try to use this to defend yourself with. And there was that frustration there, like, what should we use? Should we use a Taekwondo approach? Should we use a Kung Fu approach? Should we use a Silat approach? Should we use a Jeet Kune Do or a Kali approach? Which had the best answers? And so we studied a lot of footage, because after you've trained in martial arts for so long, you start to become ingrained in the way that martial art teaches you to defend against certain attacks. And we wanted to see how people actually attacked on the streets, because we were so ingrained in the martial arts, we weren't too sure. And so we spent hundreds of hours studying footage of attacks. And a lot of times, the way we trained in the school was completely different from what we saw on the footage. And I knew that instinctively too, working as a bouncer back in college. And I instinctively knew that. And that's probably where the frustration came from, is why am I training these kind of responses to these types of attacks when that's not a realistic attack that's going to happen to you on the street? And so we studied the footage, then we came up with some solutions. And so we drew from all our art, and we started to test them and see how each of those stacked up. Some arts just didn't even make the pressure testing because it just didn't make any it was just didn't make any sense based on the footage that we saw. And that's one thing that a lot of the old masters didn't have access to, was the security footage, the footage of actual fights. And once you start to study them, you start to notice there are certain patterns. And a lot of the older masters, they didn't have access to this, so they created a system around what they thought would happen. And then as they kept developing that system, it just became more sophisticated on how to defend against a defense versus offense versus a defense against that certain type of attack. And in many instances, in many arts, it just veered off completely off track from what we saw happening on the street on these footage. And so we formulated some techniques, and then we tried them out. And some of them worked, some didn't work. We figured out high percentage movements that would work the majority of the time. Now, I'm not going to tell you our stuff works all the time. There's going to be time where you're just going to have to ad lib and just make it up on the fly, because it's not scripted. None of this is ever scripted on the street, unfortunately. But there are things that you can do that can give you a higher percentage chance of surviving and coming out on top. And so we figured out some techniques, and then we figured out the training method to introduce it safely, so that if somebody comes to our seminar and they have no martial arts training, no experience in combatives or self-defense or martial arts, they can be integrated into our system. And by the end of the training seminar, they'll have a good level of proficiency coming out of these seminars here. And we've taken a lot of from our background, the best of what we could in each of these sections. So there's going to be training that almost looks like Tai Chi, where we're going really slow, we're trying to figure out our body mechanics, we're warming up, and all the way up to a full force on force type of training, where there's going to be some adrenaline rush happening. There's going to be a lot of mess ups as well too, because when we fail, we can learn from those mess ups and grow from those mistakes as well too. And we're going to be offering two programs. One program on, like what Patrick was talking about, how to defend yourself against that haymaker. I'm not sure where that name came from. Who makes hay, and why would haymaker? But
Maybe
anyway,
it's like tossing bales of hay, like the large movement. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a really good question. Someone Google that and figure it out and drop it in the comments below one of these posts or the podcast show.
the second program will be what we call anti-grappling. It's kind of like anti-gravity, but a lot less complicated. The same thing with grappling too. Before I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I was really clueless on the ground. I did some wrestling back in middle school, but other than that, I was clueless on the ground. And so I knew that was my weakness, so I took the deep dive into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Spent over 12 years to get my black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Lots of injuries, knee injuries, meniscus injuries, dislocated fingers, ankle injuries, shoulder injuries, the works. And competed in the tournaments, just threw myself really deep into the art. The thing is, I always looked at the grappling from a stand-up fighter point of view too. And so I immersed myself in the sport aspect, and at the same time, I always looked from an outside aspect, like, how would this work on the street? Would this work on the street? How would this work if I'm trying not to grapple? Because there are times to grapple. Maybe, you're at a wedding and you're trying to control Uncle Bob. He got out of hand a little bit and you just hold him down. That's cool. But if you're trying to hold somebody down in the middle of a gang fight, oh yeah, someone's gonna come and boot you in the head or hit you from behind. Those kind of things. And so there's times to grapple. There's time not to grapple. We'll share all that with you. And it's not that complicated. I would say street grappling requires maybe 5% of my jujitsu knowledge, but which 5% is it? And so we're going to share that 5% with you that'll make you effective. This is the same 5% I would use on the street. I'm not going to pull De La Riva guard. I'm not going to Baron Bolo anybody, and I'm not going to jump an arm bar on anybody. I'm keep it simple. These are the exact things that I would do myself if I, and again, if I'm in the street and I'm in a situation where I don't know anybody, I don't know my environment, I'm not going to take anyone down. I'm not going to engage in grappling. If somebody wants to engage in grappling with me, I'm going to try to keep it on my feet. That way I can run if I need to. I have more mobility. I have more visual awareness as well too on my feet. So there's a lot of benefits to staying on your feet, even if you're a grappler. So we'll share with you and we'll train how to prevent takedowns. We'll train, and this might be the most important part of our training, break falls. As we get older, we lose our sense of balance. We have a chance of falling. If you live in a place that has snow or ice, you're gonna fall. You're gonna slip. I used to live in Denver, and it's everybody there has fallen on their butt at one time or another in there. And just the break falling, that I think is a valuable life skill. Maybe almost as important as swimming. And so we'll go over the break falls. What
Yeah,
to do? I'm
you'll
sorry.
100 you'll 100% use, like, you may never have to pull your EDC tool, you may not have to defend a sucker punch, but like you will 100% use break fall at some point in your life, like 100%. And especially as we get older, if you fall and hurt yourself, like that could be the start of the downward spiral, right? Like you break your hip and now you can't move, and now your muscles deteriorate, and if you haven't been working out, now they're not gonna be able to bounce back, and blah 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 blah. It's the first domino that falls, essentially. So
A little off topic, but a little on topic. I'm wondering, I remember you talking to me about running these ultra obstacle courses, and sometimes you fall asleep and you
yeah.
start veering off course, kind of. Have you ever fallen like running those courses?
Nothing where I got seriously injured. Like I've come off obstacles weird and like kind of twisted my ankle a little bit, and you just kind of like limp it off. So that w when I do short obstacle course races, I tend to be more dynamic, more explosive, more high risk, where I'll jump off of things and I'll roll and stuff like that. When I'm doing ultra distance, when I'm running like 8, 12, 24 hours, I tend to be a lot more cautious coming off obstacles, because if I save a second there, it's not going to matter over a 24-hour race typically, right? But if I hurt my ankle coming off of something, it will matter. So I'm a lot much more cautious there. I have fallen off obstacles as far as like rigs and stuff like that, and I have not broken anything. And I wonder if some of that is just like my instinctive, break fall motion ability from training, where like I probably did some sort of similar motion without realizing it, right? Because I've watched guys fall off rigs and post their arms, right? So they're swinging from their hands like a monkey bar type, and they post their arm, and boom, there goes their collarbone, right? It just explodes, right? And I've fallen off the same obstacle. It was actually at the same race, probably a couple months later, and I remember landing on my back. I didn't post my arm, and again, I don't know if that was subconscious or what it was, but yeah, there was a benefit, so.
Right. After years of training, it's probably very natural for you. Let me continue on with our curriculum. The break fall, a valuable life skill, I believe. And if you have done break falls in the past, this would be a good review for you as well too, and maybe a different way to look at certain break falls, because every style, every school does it slightly different. And then we'll talk about what to do when you do hit the ground, because as much as I'd love to stay on my feet, there might be somebody that's really good at wrestling. They can take me down, or I just trip as well too. I get pushed back and I trip on something. I might end up on the ground. It's important to know what to do when you do hit the ground, but defensively, not quite offensive. We're not gonna go into any crazy submissions. We're not gonna talk about too many positions. There's only a few positions that you need to know about. And then how to get back on your feet. How to get back on your feet safely without getting your, well, with a lower risk of getting your teeth kicked in. Of course, once you're on the ground, there's just a high percentage of issues going down there, especially if there's multiple opponents or even one opponent standing over you. So, what's the safest way to get up? A lot of those things came from Brazilian jiu-jitsu, some from MMA as well too. And then beyond all that too, I think more valuable than the physical training will be our mindset training. Some of the mindfulness skills that we'll teach you will give you drills and certain tools to use to take home and use. We'll share video footage with our participants, and we'll discuss those video footage. We'll dissect those footage and see what we can learn from them. And then we have some special guests this year as well too. And we'll announce the special guests as these weeks go by. But we have some special guests that I'm looking forward to learning from these special guests too.
Nice. Yeah, you mentioned earlier the CCTV footage, which is just huge, right? The fact that the masters were theorizing, 50, 100 years ago about this, and now we have actual data. One of the follow-up questions I wanted to ask was, have you seen, right? So we went from like more of a boxing kind of history slash culture, and then, post 93, post the first UFC, there's now a lot more people watching UFC, which has takedowns, which has submissions. Have you seen that start to trickle into any of the CCTV footage, or is just the average attacker just so poorly trained and not doing that stuff that it hasn't quite influenced that? Or do you not have enough data points from like pre UFC, because obviously there's not much as much CCTV footage from pre 93.
Myself, we'll ask Patrick, but myself, I'm starting to see more of it. I think a couple reasons, like what you said, UFC is becoming more part of the popular culture now. More people are watching it, and you'll see sloppy takedowns happening. And also, there's more of our population taking Brazilian jiu-jitsu and wrestling, whether that was in a school program, like a bunch of school programs in the Midwest. Kids in middle school, just like myself, were learning wrestling. And also the popularity of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it's almost on every street corner now. And so you're going to have a lot of people that might not have gone through the entire program, but they've maybe put in a year or two at the school. And so you're going to see more and more people with looking to grapple more regularly. What are your thoughts on that, Patrick?
I agree. Yeah, I think it depends also on the type of violent situation. If it's mutual combat, you will see more grappling. Two dudes, big ego, or Hey, you look at my girlfriend, whatever. You know, they square off, they fight. You know, one will sometimes attempt to do a takedown. You might see some situations that are kind of similar to what you might see in a mixed martial arts arena. Very sloppy, of course, because you know it kind of goes back to what we often say when we train in person is like if you're fighting somebody who's a skilled mixed martial artist or skilled jiu-jitsu player or a high school wrestler, if you're fighting them on the street, man, you screwed up a long time
Yeah.
ago.
Yeah, you're in trouble. Things,
Yeah.
yeah.
You
You
know,
did
like,
not read the signs very well. That
right.
is
Yeah. Did you not see the cauliflower ear? Like, you know, so to see like really high level jiu-jitsu in these videos is very rare unless the person defending themselves or the person who like the innocent bystander who jumps in, they might be a high level jiu-jitsu player because they're trying to either protect themselves or protect an innocent person. But in terms of like mutual combat or just a random attack, the attacker won't be very skilled. They'll be very sloppy. But I wanted to kind of go back to the different types of violent attacks because what a lot of people don't understand is they again we've been immersed with movies, TV, and social media now where we think everything is like a John Wick fight or a UFC fight. And really, that's not how urban ambushes happen. You know, most of the time it's these, especially late in the last few years with unprovoked attacks, you're going to get this criminal who walks up and blindsides somebody with a haymaker sucker punch from the side or the back of the head, or even, you know, from the front if you're just pretending to pass by them on the sidewalk and then boom. They throw out these wild looping punches, and they either gonna hit the person and do damage, they're gonna hit the person, knock them out, or they're gonna miss, and then they're gonna try to close that gap and wrestle. And so usually the three sequences in a fight is sucker punch, fall, somebody falls down or gets taken down, and then it's the boot party. You know, people getting you're getting kicked in the head, you're getting stomped on, or they're both wrestling on the pavement. And so that's generally the three stages of a street ambush. And again, like I said before, most of the time it's going to be very sloppy because they're not going to, you know, again, going back to what I said before is like if they're a criminal, they're probably not going to spend 10 years to get their Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, right? They might take 6 months, if that. And then if they do become a black belt, they're probably not going to be randomly punching people on the street.
You're not randomly attacking people on the street.
So it's really important, as we will emphasize in the seminar, is to do the research and to study these videos, and read the reports, read the statistics, because then you will have a better understanding of what you're most likely going to face if someone's going to attack you on the street. That's really, really important because, as Conrad said before, you know, if you're only immersed in martial arts, you're going to always assume that someone's going to give you that perfect reverse punch from the hip. Or if you're a boxer, you're going to think, oh, jab, they're going to throw a jab cross at me and I'm going to, you know, parry and step off the line and hook. Like, you know, those things don't happen. If you're fighting a fellow martial artist, man, one or both of you screwed up a long time ago. That basically doesn't happen. Very rarely does it happen in the videos that we see anyway.
And I know there's a whole bunch of pre-attack indicators as well, that a lot of times you'll see on these videos, and I'm sure we're gonna go over that all that stuff in the seminar. But I wanted to, for some of our combatives training, we do some scenario work as part of like the some of the courses. And what's funny is these are, students essentially role playing, and I would watch them do a lot of the pre-attack indicators that are like you'll see in the CCTV footage. The fixed gaze, the darting eyes, or like the unnatural, like the clenching of the fist and like the unnatural arm movement, like all these different pre-attack indicators for a closed fist strike or a stab, et cetera. You'll see on role players doing them as well that don't even realize they're doing them. And it's not even like that high of a stress situation. It's, it's this scenario based situation with where there's no one's really gonna get hurt. So it's
Yeah,
pretty interesting.
it's just basic physiology, you know, and that's again why we do what we do because, you know, based on our experience, the stuff that we've watched, and also Conrad's background in you know the medical world, we bring in the science. You know, this Tiga Tactics Combatives is science based, and we see how people prepare to attack without realizing they're preparing to attack, you know?
Yes, 100, so much. The false draws, the yeah, all this, all the stuff, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And one of the reasons why we can study it is because we're these things are predictable because we're people always forget this. We're animals. You know, we think because we're humans, we think we've got airplanes and iPhones and all these things that we're not animals. But we are animals. If you watch a tiger stalking its prey, it's very, very similar to a human stalking its next his next victim. Very similar. Obviously, we're wearing clothes, we're a concrete jungle, but the mannerisms, the way that things are set up, how they always wait for the right opportune time to do it. It's an urban ambush is within 6 feet. Nobody, you, I've watched literally hundreds of videos. I've never seen a criminal scream, "Hey, I'm gonna attack you now," and then run from like 50 yards away and attack somebody. It's always they sneak up on you. They walk. They pretend that they're just walking by, and then bam, within 6 feet. Most of the time, within 3 feet, that's when they use speed, violence, and the element of surprise to get their victim. And it's not unlike an eagle, a tiger, a bear. It's all very related because we're all animals.
You know, it's funny with some of the pre-attack indicators, not that I'm about to attack someone, but sometimes I feel myself doing the same movements. You know, you know how, like, if you conceal carrying, like, people will touch the gun or something to make sure it's there, or touch the knife to make sure it's there. Sometimes I find myself doing that, and I'm like, man, I know the answer, and I'm still doing it. Like, subconsciously, I still have to, like, make sure it's there. It's pretty funny. It's interesting. So. Oh. And you know, you talking about the seminar and how we're gonna, you know, some of the stuff will be Tai Chi, but then some of the stuff will be more resisted. And if anyone's who's like concerned, the ratcheting up is slowly. By the time we get to like the pressure testing phase, as someone who's been through two of the seminars, you know, we didn't have anyone who was not physically or emotionally ready to go through like the pressure testing by the end. So if anyone's kind of like nervous about that, I would not be, because by the end of the seminar. You know, you'll come out feeling better trained and more capable, you know, of not only situational awareness, but you know, the mindset, skill set, tool set, for surviving street combative street encounters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people, you know, Conrad have said this before in some of our other episodes. A lot of other martial arts, they make the mistake of thinking that they'll go from zero to hero, you know, whether that's defending against attack on the street or whether that's just how they train. You know, they're just like, hey, put on the gloves, let's go 100% full contact, you know, or the opposite, which is they never pressure test. And everything is theoretical and everything's in the air. And so we bridge that gap where we have progressive, realistic training. So you'll start slow, and then we go smooth, and then we go fast. That's how you prime your body and get your mind ready for the more intense training. And it's done all step by step so that nobody is left behind. And I really pride myself on the diverse types of students we've had. You know, we've had young and old, we've had skilled and unskilled, total beginner, high level masters, you know, everybody in between. We've had senior citizens, we had like a little Asian woman who was like no more than 5 feet and like 95 pounds, and they all came through the seminars feeling very confident. Everybody was, you know, very safe, uninjured, and feeling very empowered. And it's because we prepare them for the pressure testing at the end, you know. It's not, we don't throw them to the wolves, that's for sure.
Gotcha.
And we also Evan, you said, and Patrick, we go through a lot of drilling too. So the drilling isn't all hard. We start out really slow and soft. We gradually work you into it, and we want to give you these drills so that our participants can take it home and continue to train it. We want them to be able to train themselves. After taking our seminar, hopefully they can take these tools that they've learned, bring them home or to their school or to their friends or family, and train with each other. And if you you you're You own a school. You can take these drills and implement them into your system. If you have a family, you take these drills, go home and show little Johnny how to do some of these moves, how to protect themselves. Teach them some of our mindset training as well too. If you're part of a church group, bring this back to your church. If you're part of at work, you want some safety at work, you can bring this back to your place and help train that as well too. So our goal is to give you the tools so that one, you're safe, and two, that you can continue to train with.
I think that's the biggest value, as if for those of the like probably a lot of our listeners are probably, have been training martial arts, some of them for years or decades, right? I think the biggest value in Tika Tactics is you two have done the distillation process already, and it's like, all right, it narrows the scope. Be like, all right, now I know what to teach someone who's not going to spend as much time training, right? So I think there's a lot of value because you have so many. Everyone's got. Anyone who's been training for a while has so many moves and so many variations and so many options in their brain. When they go to like teach someone, they're like, I don't even know where to start sometimes. Or like, how am I supposed to teach you something if I only have a week or a weekend or a month? Like, what? How do I get you ready super quick? And I think the template you guys provide and the courses you provide do that for people, and allows you to. And again, based off of the CCTV footage, all the stuff we've talked about already. The one kind of follow-up I wanted to ask is, right, so you have a lot of our courses are online. And again, link will be in the show notes down below. Check it out. So we have a punch defense course, several anti-grappling courses. If someone has taken all, let's say someone has taken all those courses already, is there still value in coming to the seminar? That would be my question.
You want to go
Either
first,
one.
Patrick, or?
No, absolutely. For me, the you've got to train in person. There's no substitute for that. For example, like I'm a one stripe white belt in jiu-jitsu right now. I love it. I'm totally addicted to it. There is no way I could learn this art through video only. I could
No,
get a head
no
up.
way.
I can definitely be a lot better than everybody else in my class if I only learned it through video. But there, at some point, I've got to get on the bat and do these moves on somebody else. And that's very difficult if I don't have a partner, but that's jiu-jitsu. Obviously, grappling requires a partner. This is absolutely. But in terms of just street combatives, where you're fighting for your life in a realistic, scenario that could happen, I think both is very helpful. The online courses allows you to train at your own pace, in your own home when it's convenient, most convenient for you. You can do it by yourself. You could do it with your spouse. You could do it with your kids or your friends. And then when you go in person, then you can kind of fill in the gaps that you have when you're training at home by yourself. And then Connor could talk more about our whole slogan about, enlightenment is in the training.
Right. Definitely. I think like what you said, Patrick. Each medium, if you will, has its benefits and its drawbacks. And I think with the in-person training, one of the benefits will be it's somewhat organic. We have an outline that we follow. And at the same time, if somebody asks a certain question, we might go slightly a certain different way. And that's one thing that you can have as a participant as well too, is if you're there in real time and you're training and you have a question, you can ask us. Also, we'll be going around watching. We'll be able to correct your form. We'll be able to give you a tip in a real time, which we can't do through the video. That being said, though, video's great if you want to review something. It's always there for you over and over again, but it also has its limitation. And also, training with a partner very important as well too. And if you join us in person, and you're holding the pads, for example, and you're not holding it correctly, we can come by and help you and make sure that you're safe as well too. So it's not just the performance of the techniques, it's also how to take this program home and use it correctly as well too.
Yeah. You know, I know I've learned, even when I know all the material coming in, even just hearing it again and seeing it in person, I will make some fine adjustments to my technique, my skills, essentially, while I'm there. And I've done that with jiu-jitsu. Like, someone will show a move I've been taught 6 or 7 times, and then I'll be like, oh, that's what I've been doing wrong. I'm supposed to rotate his wrist this way in addition to doing all the other stuff. So a lot of times, I feel like the more times you're exposed to information, the more you can, like, all right, I can fix these one or two things this time. And then you can continue to fine tune it. You know, even at school, right? Like, there's people don't just go to class and then take the test, right? They go to class, they read the book, maybe, you know, if it's like a science-based course, maybe they're doing the lab work as well, right? And they're doing all three of those to be able to gain the knowledge to pass the test. And I think the same thing goes for martial arts, right? You go to class, but then, like, you should also be reading books, you should be listening to podcasts, you should be watching videos, right? You should be doing all of those things if you really want to get good at something. If you're just a hobbyist and you just want to do it because it helps you blow off some steam, then yeah, you know, you can just show up to class and kind of not think about it the rest of the week. But if you want to get good and you want to spend, make sure your money's going to a good place and you're developing skill, you know, I think doing a little bit of all those things, and like you said, there's drawbacks and takeaways for each one of those, that's going to really kind of develop you to the maximum potential there.
And also, one last thing, and this isn't very tangible, but for me, I think it's a valuable part. Just meeting some real cool people. Like Patrick said, there's going to be participants from all walks of life. Everything from a soccer mom all the way up to a special forces badass named Evan.
Yeah, I learned as much from other students as I do from like the actual program. Like, I really enjoy just seeing all the arts, right? Because when you go to a martial arts seminar for the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, everyone there practices Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so you're not getting in like this mix. But when you go to the seminar in Maryland, we're gonna get, you know, Silat, Aikido, we're gonna get Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, you know, like you said, soccer mom, special forces combatives, all that stuff, and then the 12 black belts that between the two of you that you have, right? So you're getting a little sprinkling of everything that can really expand your skill set and your knowledge. Wing Chun, we had Wing Chun there last time. Muay Thai, right? I mean, I'm sure I'm missing probably half a dozen different things. Just
Yeah, for me, one of the I think the coolest thing about training in person, kind of going off what Conrad said, is it's just meeting the really cool people, and it's, for me, it's so gratifying that we teach these seminars, and then the students who never knew each other before, they become friends at our seminars, and I know a few of them, like, they hang out now, you know, because of us,
Not
and
nice.
that wouldn't have happened before if they, you know, they never attended our seminar. So I just, that to me is very gratifying.
Yeah, I had on my other podcast, Strength and Speed, I had Tommy Chrysostomo. I'm gonna mispronounce his
Oh,
last name. I had
yes.
him after the last seminar. I had him on because he did obstacle course racing and he teaches Kali. And I was like, oh, it'll be an interesting crossover episode. It's like, why don't you come on my podcast? So,
Cool.
yeah.
Yeah, Tom's an awesome guy.
Yeah, it's been cool. I'm going to jump all the way back to the beginning of the episode real quick when we're talking about the use of a fist as a weapon. You know, and when as a special forces guy, as someone who has to do occasionally, like, we do like low visibility operations, or we're trained for low visibility operations, you need to be able to, like, explain away any sort of weapon you have if you're not necessarily, like, if the local police, government, whatever, is looking for you or wants to stop you from doing something, right? So you need to be able to explain it away. That's why what's funny is when you watch, like, if you watch the James Bond movies, he's got all these, like, crazy gadgets that, like, shoot lasers from his watch, right? And, like, his shoes fly, and he's got, like, a jetpack, and it's all this, like, crazy technical stuff. And it's like, oh no, that's a terrible thing to carry around if you're going to be up to no good, because you can't explain it away. And when I look at, like, how a criminal would attack, right? Like, you can explain, sometimes you can explain away knives, right? Like, oh, it's my fruit knife. I use it for cutting fruit. You know, if you have the right like accessories, my lunchbox, I have fruit in there, I have a cutting board, right? But your fists, you can always explain those. Like, I can't remove my fists, right? So like,
Right.
I always have that weapon. So whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy, those weapons are always on you. So, you know, it really is a very great tool for someone who wants to attack someone again, because it's always there. You know, it makes it through TSA every time, right? You walk through TSA security every single time. You walk anywhere you
Right.
go, you know, the tool is there, you know, for the bad guy, but also for the good guy. So.
And I
Absolutely.
also want to say that this is a great program if you're a CCW person, you're a knife person. A lot of times we don't have that tool in our hands pointed at the threat. We have to get to those tools, and by being able to survive with your empty hands long enough to create a little distance so that you can draw your tool safely, this will work straight into your skill set there.
100%. Yeah, we did have some and like I think NRA instructors were there at the last one, or was it the one before that?
Yes.
I can't remember. But yeah, and some of them had, I think one of them had like no martial arts background. I could be wrong. So yeah, we deal with that problem at work all the time. Well, I'll just shoot him. It's like, no, nah, the guy is on top of you before you can pull your rifle up. So you won't just shoot him. You're gonna have to do something else first, in order
Right.
to access that weapon.
It goes
Well,
back to.
especially, I'm sorry, Patrick.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, especially a civilian, if you're concealed carrying, it's concealed, you know, and you've got to wait till there's a threat happening. You can't brandish your tool there. And so you have to literally wait for a threat to be on you before you have justification to pull your tool there.
Yeah, all that just kind of goes back to the popular saying now, which is, you know, you don't want to be a gunfighter. You want to be a fighter with a gun. And that goes with whether it's a knife, tactical pan, flashlight. You want to be a fighter or a warrior who's capable with any weapon, whether that's your empty hand or your foot or a book, you know, baseball bat, scissors, whatever happens to be. I think. More often than not, I run into a gun enthusiast, a shooter, police officer, a military person who can't punch, kick, knee, or elbow worth a damn, you know, worth a damn. So they're just relying all solely on their tool set, and their skill set is severely lacking. So this seminar and just our training in general is a way to remind people that you have to be as well-rounded as possible, because you can't, as Conrad said, nobody's walking around with a gun or a knife in their hand unless they want to be shot by the police. So
We,
even the police, you know, holster their sidearm
yeah,
when
absolutely,
going to
right, yeah.
calls.
We like to say the enemy has a vote. That's
Yes.
what we always say, right? So whether you're, you know, in Iraq or whatever, right? We would prefer if they would just go stand toe to toe and shoot it out with us, because we would crush them, right? But that's not what they did. They said did the insurgency, dressed in plain clothes, etc., setting bombs, setting ambushes. Same thing goes with criminals in the United States, right? They have a vote in what you do, whether it be we're attacking with a knife, we're attacking with a punch, or we're attacking by tackling you to the ground. So you have to be, like you were saying, you have to be comfortable in all of the ranges. And I do think people tend to get pigeonholed. They find one that they enjoy, maybe, or they find whatever's close, and they just kind of like deep dive into that. And you know, I've watched Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys that are high ranked, like be like, all right, we're gonna today at training. Today for training, we're gonna punch things, and their punching form is just like complete trash. And I was like, I thought everyone, you're a martial artist. I assumed you knew how to punch.
Yes,
You do
yes.
not, even though you could tie me into a pretzel if we roll, you know? So it is, you need a little bit of training in everything, you know? And I think even like I really love knife arts. I think those are really interesting. But I think my knife arts have gotten better from being capable in the other ranges of combat, right? Because you can, I now, you know, with From striking training, I can get to the outside. I'm better at getting to the outside and getting to the flanks. And then from the grappling training, right? Obviously grappling over knives, but then also like arm dragging someone to get to their flank. Mm-hmm. I think all the if you train across all of them, they all kind of tie in together, and you'll find you build up in different ways in the different ranges, even if you weren't expecting it.
Yes.
Right.
All right. Anything else we want to cover before we kind of wrap this up?
No, we just look forward to seeing you there, listener.
Yeah. That is the next in-person seminar, I believe, at the end of April. Any other things on the calendar we can sneak peek now that have been more finalized? Or
yeah. So in May we'll be having our next Zoom webinar, and so that's an opportunity for people who live around the world but they can't train with us in person. They can join us live in real time with our webinar. So that will be in May, and then in June we'll be in San Francisco. Also doing the Street Combative seminar for the West Coast. So those are two other events that you can look forward to if you're, west of the Rocky Mountains. Instead of flying over to Maryland, you could always join us in San Francisco.
Sounds good. Dr. Conrad, any closing thoughts or any announcements, shout outs you want to make, et cetera?
No, other than, let's go ahead and just reveal our first special guest instructor, which is you, Evan. We're going to be excited to have you join us in Maryland. So we're always appreciative of your experience and your background when you come to share at these seminars as well, too. So we can't wait to work with you.
I'm excited as well. This was the last two Tiga Tactics seminar were two of my best weekend of the entire year. And I almost didn't go last year. And I think Patrick had messaged me at one point. He's like, hey, you should really come to this. And I was like, and then I rearranged things and I got there and I was like, I can't believe I wasn't going to come. So yeah, I'm not making the mistake this year. I'm planning well in advance. I don't have to jump through hoops last minute, but it was cool. Not only for the training and the meeting of the people, but like Dr. Conrad likes to say, it's just a bunch of MANs there, right? A bunch of martial arts nerds sharing a love for the art, the culture, the systems, etc. It's just a very unique atmosphere that I enjoy a lot. So
cool. We're more than honored to have you.
Thank you. Anything else, Dr. Conrad, before we jump over to Patrick?
No. Thank you for listening in. We'll see you at the next podcast.
Patrick, final thoughts, close out.
Yeah, I'm just pumped. Like I said before, I love in-person seminars because I don't want to get too mystical about this, but I'm really a big believer in energy. We're all, scientifically speaking, we're all made up of just energy, basically. So when we have open-minded, not necessarily like-minded people, but open-minded people, we may not all believe or think the same way, but if we're open-minded, I feel it. I literally feel that energy, and it just makes, I think it makes everybody feel good, and empowers everybody as an entire group collectively. And that to me is awesome. And that's, I can't wait to share that with all our listeners, and obviously with Dr. Conrad and with you, Evan. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, looking forward to it. We're going to, again, check the show notes down below. I'm going to drop links down there for all of our social media channels. I'm going to drop links down there for the seminar. I'm going to drop links down there for if you can't make the seminar, but you want to get some of this information through some of the online courses. Again, we highly encourage you to not only take the online courses, but also to come to the seminar. Or you can do it either order. I think either one works. And just to kind of get that knowledge, get it in, have a way to access it, and continue to refine those skills in the future. So looking forward to seeing you all there. And yeah, check the notes down below for all the good links and all the good stuff down there. We will catch all of you guys later.